Welcome to Security Wire Weekly, a CertSecurity.com podcast for February 1st, 2012. In this edition, we talk to Marty Roche of SourceFire about his vision of the future of intrusion prevention and detection.
You know, when Firefox launches another executable, and then that executable starts downloading other software that starts installing itself, we have visibility into all of these sorts of things. And not only do we have visibility, we also have the ability to control what happens next.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Westervelt. I'm sure you've heard of Snort, the intrusion detection prevention tool. Marty Roche is Chief Technology Officer and founder of SourceFire, the creator of Snort, and we had an interesting discussion about the future of intrusion prevention and detection technology. SourceFire is wrapping in its acquisition of Immunet, adding the technology to its intrusion prevention software. I asked Marty to talk about what the future may hold for intrusion prevention and whether companies like NetWitness, it's now part of RSA, threaten the future of intrusion prevention. RSA held a media day. One of the technologies it's pushing is, you know, NetWitness as a way to gain more insight into the network. And they're seeing it as more of a real-time protection rather than something that maybe an incident response team or forensics investigators would use, a tool that they would use. Does a technology like NetWitness threaten IDS, IPS vendors?
I know they tried to position it like it would for a while before they got acquired. We never really saw it that way because, NetWitness style systems always seem to be built with the concept that you needed to know what questions to ask to get information out of it. Maybe they're featuring it up and adding in some sort of automated analysis to point out things that are interesting.
Yeah.
But I never really got the sense from NetWitness that it really had great real-time applications. It seemed like more of a, hey, we've got all this data, now let's go find, things that are potentially bad based on the questions that we're going to ask it.
That's interesting because that's kind of how they played it. They're working on the analysis layer, the analytics piece now to apply to it.
I mean, they very well could be going down that road. Tricky to do it right, especially be able to do it in real time with the data volumes they're talking about. You turn your collectors into kind of IDS sensors, and then you get back to how much control are they going to bring to the environment? Are people going to be running these things in line? They certainly don't have a history of being run in line. And you also get into the question of, to some extent, data volume. I mean, knowing what I know about their system, that thing collects a lot of data, and it's pretty raw. And in the past, you had to be able to know which questions to ask it to get data out of it. Our approach is much more focused on kind of having expertise built into the system and letting you know when things are, these are the things that you need to look at. I guess our system is more built in the mindset of, this kind of awareness concept. Maybe they're both awareness systems in their own rights, but, I don't see people putting IPS investments or IDS investments on hold because they're looking at NetWitness. I haven't seen that. Although, since the acquisition happened, they've been a lot quieter than they were when they were a private company. So, it's kind of dropped off my radar to some extent. But yeah, there could potentially be some competition there down the road, I guess. But it'd be really interesting to see how their approach scales to solving the kinds of problems that we solve. Just knowing what I know about their sensing and collection infrastructure.
Well, you mentioned that it doesn't have a history of running in line. What does that mean?
Well, it wouldn't be usable as an IPS.
Ah, okay.
Right. So, I mean, this kind of gets down to what's important to you, but Mr. User. But it's so there's a whole part of the world that says if you can detect it, why not prevent it? Right.
Well, right.
If they can detect all this stuff but not prevent it, then all you're putting in a burglar alarm that's going to detect 1,000 burglars a day. Great. Which one do you go chase down first? And, why do I have to chase them down instead of just, stopping at the front door? That's what I'm talking about when I say that they don't have a history of running in line. Building an inline intrusion prevention sensor is actually, it's a fairly tricky thing. It takes a while to get right. And they just haven't done it before. So I think that they're much more on the awareness side of things, which you need. I mean, don't get me wrong. Our bread and butter differentiation is all built around awareness. But it'd be interesting to see, if it came down. I'm just thinking about, geez, if it came down to a fight between us and them, how would that look? I think it'd be an interesting one. But like I said, so far we don't really compete.
Yeah. The other piece is detecting attacks as they're happening, and RSA points to NetWitness as it sounded the alarm when the attack was happening against them. It was a little too late, obviously. It did sound the alarm. For companies that have an IPS in place, are they capable at detecting attacks as they happen in real time, so that you can take action?
Well, if you take our IPS plus the AMP technology, that's exactly what they would do. They would detect and stop the attack.
So that was part of your Immunet acquisition, right?
Yeah. So the FireAMP technology is built on top of the Immunet platform, and the Immunet guys have been working on FireAMP all year. So the FireAMP technology is... the technology that really enhances the awareness that users have of what's going on in their environments and provides them with a lot of methods to protect themselves from modern malware that's out there and the modern threats that use malware to spread throughout enterprises and really get embedded in enterprises.
How does it do that? What's it do?
It's got... technology that you put on to your endpoint. So it's got an agent that goes on the endpoint, and it's a very lightweight agent. It weighs in at about 8 megabytes in size. And basically, what it does is when users execute code on their system, so they run executables, open files, things like that, it basically extracts metadata about what the system is about to do and ships it up to a cloud analysis engine. And the cloud analysis engine is running several analyzers, and basically it gives you answers back about, whether or not you should be running this software, known good, known bad, or somewhere in the middle, what we think about it based on the metadata that we've received. But not only does it do that, it also gives us all the information about what the users are doing on their desktops. So basically, we can see things like... when Firefox launches another executable, and then that executable starts downloading other software that starts installing itself, we have visibility into all of these sorts of things. And not only do we have visibility, we also have the ability to control what happens next. So when the users see these things going on, they can intervene and basically tell all of their platforms in their enterprise that are hooked up to the FireAMP system not to run the software. And they do it without having to do a big, signature distribution mechanism, without having to do a bunch of interaction with the desktops. What we do is we update our cloud defensive engines, and then when these things try to run on other desktops, they're automatically protected.
That FireAMP technology, is that embedded within the next generation firewall, or is it a separate piece?
It's a separate piece today. Down the road, we're looking at the potential for integrating it into our network products as well.
Mm-hmm.
The AMP technology is net new technology. It's using cloud-based analysis methods, and it's got a zero-day detection concept built right into it that takes advantage of does prevalence analysis essentially to figure out, hey, this is a piece of software that's never been seen before. Huh, that's weird. And why is it that Microsoft Excel is launching a new executable process anyway? It's developed to operate in a world where you don't need signatures to pick these things up, because unique in enterprises is typically bad, and things like Microsoft Excel don't launch other programs and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So. That's kind of how we're coming at it. Yeah, the AMP technology does it does have a does have a blacklist built into it and a whitelist too. It's capable of telling things that are known bad and known good. But then it's got a variety of other technologies that are built to detect things that, you know, either haven't been seen before or, you know, are indicative of polymorphic malware in the environment. Very, very good at it.
That's interesting because I was going to ask you if it's an alternative to say that what we're seeing from whitelisting vendors like Bit9.
It very well could be. You know, we haven't. The product is just coming to market now, so we're just starting to engage the market now. And you know, 6 months from now, I'll be able to tell you who our competitors are a lot better, because I think our customers are going to figure out who we're competing against much more quickly than we are.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think all the guys who are dealing with advanced malware stuff, whether it be a Bit9 doing whitelisting or a FireEye or a Dumbala or something like that, those are the guys who are actually concentrating on kind of this new generation of malware and attack vectors. And I think that we're more similar to them than we would be to kind of the old school vendors who've been playing this game for a long time.
Yeah. Can you talk about a little bit more about the next generation firewall as well? Just in terms of, you mentioned application control, and that's obviously, you know, with all next generation firewalls out there at this point, it seems like they're moving towards more application awareness, right?
Yeah, and that's kind of the big hook that next-generation firewalls have, is being able to control apps in your environment. So in terms of our technology doing that, you know, it can do that as well. We actually have a variety of things that we can write controls around, and this is one of the things that I've been talking to my engineers about here, is that basically we have the ability to identify much more than just applications in the environment. We can identify users, we can identify devices, operating systems, we can identify files, we can identify, I think, 8 to 10 different types of things. I've got a head cold this morning, so I'm not quite firing on all cylinders.
Oh, no problem. No
but, I believe it's either 8 or 10 unique aspects of devices, users, traffic, you know, things like that in the environment. We can write controls around all of them. Most of our competitors can really detect and identify 3, maybe 4 things in the environment and write controls around them. So we can actually control a lot more types of things in the environment, like what types of devices are allowed in the environment and how they can communicate, data flows in the environment, all those sorts of things. So, it gives us a lot of flexibility with our customers, and we believe it gives us some differentiation against the other NGFW vendors that are already out there.
Mm-hmm. Endpoints are constantly changing. We're having more and more mobile devices being introduced to the network now. Has that made it more difficult for IPS systems?
It does to some extent. I mean, there's not kind of a level of malware out there for mobile devices that there is for kind of classic devices, but.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly complicates the picture when devices can walk in and out of the network on the fly.
Is there anything that can be applied to an IPS, or do you envision future functionality in an IPS to handle this influx of mobile devices, or should they be treated just like any device that connects to the network?
I think they should be mostly treated like any device that connects to the network. I mean, they're running operating system software and.
Mm-hmm.
They have vulnerabilities and things like that. So I think you can treat them very much the same as any computer in the environment.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of have shorter points of presence on the environment in terms of coming and going and things like that. I think what it really means is you have to get the automated tuning processes deep into the IPS as you can. The IPS really has to become self-tuning after a while in terms of, you know, recognizing when new things show up in the environment and then accounting for them on the fly. Well, if you do that, you know, I've been kind of espousing this idea for a while now, and customers have differing levels of enthusiasm for it. people who have Sarbanes-Oxley compliance regimes that they have to be able to account for their IPS policy every step of the way are not enthusiastic about it. People who are getting popped by mobile malware are very enthusiastic about it.
Well, that does it for this edition of Security Wire Weekly. Be sure to check out our previous podcasts by going to our podcast landing page at searchsecurity.com/podcast. And as always, you can get the latest security news and information at our news page at searchsecurity.com/news. For now, I'm Rob Westervelt. Have a great day.